107 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com are featuring all that's best from the King of Instruments. This is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
Hello again and welcome to this extra podcast edition of Community Keyboards with me, Ian Wolstenholme. If you've tuned in to the other June programme, then you'll have heard some extracts from the recent Keyboard Cavalcade Festival held at the Village Hotel in Blackpool at the end of last month. During my visit there, I had the opportunity to sit down with Trevor Flunder from Allen's Music Centre in Great Yarmouth. And after this short contribution of Crazy Little Thing Called Love from his colleague in the business, Tom Horton, on Lowry Prestige Plus Organ, I'll be chatting with Trevor. Isn't it what they say in the organ and keyboard world? There's always somebody who you haven't encountered for whatever reason. And it seems to be the case, certainly today here at the Blackpool Keyboard Cavalcade Festival, the one or two people that we've not, our paths haven't crossed for either many a year, or in this case, I think probably never. But it's a delight and a joy to welcome Trevor Flunder from Allen's Music Centre. It's lovely to, I suppose it's the geographic distance between you and I, Trevor, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we've been coming to the Blackpool Festival over 20 years.
I don't know. It beggars belief. I don't know whether I deliberately avoided, which I'm sure I didn't.
I think when we do festivals, this stems back from when we used to do Lowry. We always like to be in our own spot. So we were always in a separate room to everybody else. And so we never really mingled with the other dealers so much. And to be honest, when we first started doing Lowry and coming along, we got a lot of... not hostility, but maybe a sort of bit of derision that we were doing Lowry organs. So we kind of just kept our head down and just kept ourselves to ourselves.
I mean, let's be honest, Lowry as a brand, and I know you kind of major on Lowry. There's one or two others we'll probably talk about in a moment. But Lowry per se has, dare I say, alongside the Hammond name, been sort of de rigueur in electronic organs over decades, hasn't it? I mean, even when Lowry was Lowry.
Yeah, I mean, when we took over Lowry, 25 years ago, most people in the UK had assumed that they'd gone out of business because they weren't being imported and sold or represented at the festivals or anything. And so when we went over to America and talked to Lowry and said, you know, there's a great market in the UK, and brought them over and started doing to the festivals, everybody was very surprised. And to be honest, that first generation of organs that we brought over, they weren't very technically advanced, because Lowry had only recently been bought out by Kauai, and they were working out how to integrate the technology and develop the instruments. So they weren't the most fantastic organs in the world. They were quite old-fashioned compared to what the Japanese manufacturers were doing at the time. If you had the Rolands and the Yamahas and everything, because that's back then when Yamaha was still selling AR-100s and Tenix were doing G-100s, you know. And so when we came along with the Lowry's, they did look, in comparison, much more old-fashioned.
And kind of who's having the last laugh now, you might say.
And, you know, we really did understand the concept that Lowry had at the time, that they were making, and we still talk about this over and over, a hobby instrument.
Yes.
They really did understand that the people who buy the organs are buying them, it's a hobby. It's something to have fun on at home. It doesn't matter if you're not going to be the best sounding player in the world, you're not going to be able to understand the circle of fifths. If you can sit down and enjoy yourself, that's what it was all about. And that was their kind of philosophy for all the time that we were selling Lowry organs. And it's still how we demonstrate and sell the organs now. It's about people enjoying the hobby.
And of course, Lowry as a product these days has a image, and I don't think I'm far off the mark, of being sort of the Rolls-Royce end of the market. I mean, everything is beautifully finished and crafted and it looks the part. Does it therefore mean that it appeals to a very specific sector of the organ buying public?
I think that The reason for Lowry's concentration on the presentation of the instrument, again, is they really did appreciate that these instruments are more than just being an instrument. They are a person's pride and joy. For most of our customers, it's probably the most expensive thing that they own. And it's going to have pride of place in their home. It's going to be a big piece of furniture. And so the way it looks and the way it's presented is just as important as the way it sounds and plays, because that's part of the joy of ownership. And it's like lots of things that you buy. You buy a car, you may not buy something that is, you may see in a car that is the most technically advanced, but if it doesn't look nice, it's not going to sell. And it's always surprised me, actually, that a lot of the manufacturers that are making what are home instruments have not considered how they look in the home, or especially the home of the potential customers that they're selling them to. So a lot of the ultra-modern kind of look of instruments does appeal to some people, but for our Lowry customers, especially in America, which is obviously Lowry's biggest market, it was the cabinet-style instruments that are most popular. What always surprised me, though, is that towards the end of Kauai manufacturing Lowry organs, we did a lot of work with them to encourage them to make different colours. Because they'd always done two wooden finishes. There was oak or what they called it, cherry, but this kind of mahogany kind of look. And we said, you know, in Europe, people like white organs. You know, the Versi instruments, the German instruments, they love their white. So we persuaded them to make white instruments. And in fact, the Rialto that we introduced was the first instrument they actually made as a production model in white finish. And what amazed us is that it didn't go down well in America. It went down a storm over here, but we were really surprised, and so were Lowry. They thought that a white instrument would be amazing, you know, because it's Liberace kind of look and all that kind of thing. But no, the traditional wooden look was for their customers. And so they ended up calling the Rialto in white the European edition. Hmm. After that model, they did white versions of the organs as one-offs, and even did a couple of black ones for us that looked quite stunning. But they all came over to us. So the customers that own the white and the black editions of things like the Marquis and the Aria, they are the only ones in the world. They never sold any in America.
Fascinating. We find increasingly, Trevor, that certainly looking around some of the dealerships up and down the land, that the tendency now, of course, is towards keyboards rather than the traditional home organ, which obviously Lowry still figure is high up there, as you say, in the various markets. I'd be interested to know from you as a dealer, how does that sort of square when you get Mr. and Mrs. Joe Public into your showroom down there in Great Yarmouth, and they see the nice pieces of furniture and, as you say, some of the unusual colours, but they're looking for a keyboard. How do you tackle that as a retailer, I wonder?
Well, to be honest, there's not many people that end up visiting the showroom because what we do is quite specialist. It is very much, we were talking about this before we did the interview, it's on the telephone. We talk to so many of our customers on the phone and now obviously via the internet with videos and so forth. So there's not many people that come into the store that are surprised to see organs. You know, we don't have many people passing by that have come in to look at a keyboard and go, oh, you do organs. They're kind of made the trip to come and see us. But it is actually very interesting, aside from the showroom, but online, with the videos that we do on YouTube, the response that we get from showing organs. And genuinely, we have phone calls every week from people going, I didn't know I could still get an organ. That's always what I wanted. But I bought a keyboard or a Clavinova or whatever because that's what I thought all I could get. And they are genuinely very moved that they've discovered that organs are still around. Because, you know, if there's not a local dealer, then they're not going to be exposed to them. And a lot of organ societies nowadays, they don't have so many players attending them. They are very much kind of concert environments. So they don't get to mingle very much with owners and... to be honest, if you go to a lot of the organ clubs, people have keyboards as well, because keyboards are wonderful. I mean, we sell a lot of keyboards as well. We've been a Yamaha dealer for as long as I can remember, and we sell an awful lot of keyboards because they are fantastic pieces of technology. They're great instruments, but they are very different to an organ. And so it's nice for us to sell them alongside each other. But as I say, it's amazing the people that come to us because they're just amazed that they can buy an organ still. And they're over the moon that they can do that.
It's interesting as well. A few years ago, I remember reading this very unusual name, Ringway, first appeared in the press, to the extent that I thought, oh, I'll have to have one of those. And I did. I bought an RS-400EU. Mm. But Ringway, as a manufacturer, which again is another brand that you specialise in at Allens, how has that's kind of developed over since they started a few years ago, and they just seem to be turning out more and more supreme instruments, don't they?
What's great for us is it's an alternative choice because for a great many years, 25 years, we were obviously Lowry, and we had a reputation for selling Lowry organs. But we always wanted to offer our customers more choice. And so even before Kauai finished producing the Lowry organs, we were already Reversi dealers because they offer a real counterpoint to the at the time to the Lowry organs. But when Kauai decided to cease production, we were obviously looking for another manufacturer or another avenue. And we ended up going out to Ringway, not by mistake, but certainly it wasn't our original plan, because it came about from talking to dealers in America. So it's a bit of a long story. but essentially, we were one of Lowry's top dealers in the world, and we had close contacts with two of the other largest dealers in the US. And of course, between the three of us, we're like, well, we need to still have organs to sell. Maybe if we get together, we can somehow be able to finance producing a new instrument. Maybe we can talk to Kauai or something, you know, and if we placed an order and paid for so many units, maybe something could happen. There were all kinds
of... So there was a huge commercial sentiment behind
it. All kinds of ideas going around to try and continue producing instruments. And we ended up speaking to Enrico, who owns the Aula company, because obviously they used to make very nice instruments, very nice organs. And the Americans, funnily enough, had links with him as well. And they said, well, let's talk to Enrico. Maybe he can make us an organ. And essentially Enrico said, no, I don't make organs anymore. I don't manufacture anymore. However, I know a man that does.
It's not what you know, it's who you know, isn't it?
Because obviously he had transferred all his manufacturing to Ringway in China. And he said, well, you need to talk to Ringway people. You know, they already make organs. We've helped them develop organs. Maybe they could design and develop an organ for yourselves. So we all went out to China. So I went out there, and the two American dealers met me over there. And I was blown away by the Ringway facility, because I hadn't had much experience of Ringway organs. And I hadn't realised how the company had grown, because the early organs that we'd had over here in the UK, models like the 400 and the 480 and so forth, were actually very early models. Yes. In kind of the Ringway's entry into the market. And as a company, it had grown exponentially during that time, making electric pianos, and they developed all of their own technology. This is the amazing thing, is that I think when they first began, they were borrowing a lot of technology, and it was coming from outside. But certainly when I went over there, they developed their own sound engine, and they were making their own circuit boards, as the main board of the instrument. They had their own speaker design section, that where they were designing their own speakers, their own amplifiers. It was quite a facility. Yeah. I was just amazed. And so we spent a week over there working on developing what we call the Este models, because it's a very old traditional name in America. And they produced two very nice starter instruments for us, which we've been selling in the UK very well. But while I was over there, I was in their demonstration hall, where they have all their instruments that they make. And I sat and played an RS-800. Swear words came out, because it was I couldn't believe.
Oh dear. Yeah. This is good.
This is such an instrument. You know, why isn't anybody doing this? Just seemed crazy, because this was a great sounding organ. Yes, it's very modern looking, but that's not against it, because it's nice to have something that is a counterpoint to all the traditional instruments we sold. So I spoke to Ringway people, I spoke to Enrico. I thought, yeah, we're going to relaunch it in the UK. And while I was there, they invited me up to the R&D centre, where they had the A2000 in development and the RS-760, and they said, well, this is what's coming along. I'm like, wow.
So you got a glimpse of the future as well.
I hate to use the phrase, but it was a bit of a no-brainer. It's kind of like, we need to be the people selling these in the UK. We want to relaunch the Ringway brand in the UK. And the response we had was absolutely amazing, because I think it was Paul Wise and Paul Carman that originally introduced Ringway, and actually had a very good reputation, because they've done such a good job of marketing and selling the instruments. And so we picked up from where they left off, but we had this next generation of instruments to show off, and it was actually amazing.
And of course you have other ambassadors, Peter Hayward as well, of course, who's still there.
And it was fascinating learning about the organ market in China.
Yes.
Because it's enormous over there.
Oh, yes,
I mean, they're crazy numbers. You know, it's like one of the music schools has like 10,000 students. Ringway makes it's a crazy number, like 10,000 organs a year. It's some ridiculous number of instruments that they make over there. Because that's always been the issue for organ manufacturing, is it's always been such small scale. And that's one of the problems Kauai had, was justifying investment for relatively few units in manufacturing terms.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, as you say, over in China, Japan as well, for that matter, it's the whole education from very early ages, you know, youngsters learning how to play these instruments. And, of course, over here, I know we've had in the past, the Yamaha Music Schools, the Technics Music Academies, etc., etc., but, you know, there doesn't seem to be this interest from a very young age. Or am I wrong then?
Certainly for our experience in the UK, it's not a young person's hobby. It's very different, I think, because in the Asian market, the organ is looked upon as an instrument like a piano,
yes.
You know, where you children start learning it at a very young age. And not saying that organs are looked down upon, as it were, in the UK, but they're certainly not part of the musical instrument family, as it were, and the culture and so forth. So if mum and dad are thinking about their child learning an instrument, an organ wouldn't pop into their head. No, they would think of piano, violin, all the traditional instruments. Whereas in Japan, in Asia, an organ actually would be something that they would encourage their children to learn from at a very early age. And amazingly enough, Ringway sent us a whole library of videos of their students playing. and they're just absolutely amazing. These youngsters, the yes. The standard to which they play is just
before phenomenal. They can barely reach the pedal.
And they have a. This is all pre-COVID, but they have a annual celebration and festival. And I think Peter went and played over and represented the UK. And so they were asking us if we'd like to go over. And me and Tom were looking at each other. I'm not going to go over there.
You don't want to be upstaged by a 4-year-old.
It's a wonderful honour, but I'm not sure.
Thank you very much. We'll watch from afar.
Because they're just amazing, but their enthusiasm for is amazing. And they have continually to develop advance the products as well. So we're very, very happy with our association with them. And of course, it's culminated in the new instrument, the Maestro, which was a wonderful collaboration between Ringway and Enrico in Italy and us. Because obviously, during COVID, the idea of us going over to China and developing the bigger Estee models was obviously put on hold. But for us in the UK, we had this amazing demand for organs. You know, we were still very, very busy, and so we needed to have an instrument that was a model above the A2000, and also something that would appeal to somebody who wanted a more traditional looking instrument. So we got Enrico in Italy to get his Italian cabinet makers to produce wooden cabinets for us, and we got Ringway to work with, we worked with them and some of the American designers, and we came up with our own voicing for the organ sounds, our own styles, and the Chinese did a lot of work to integrate that into the instruments, and so the Maestro was born. So we took the Ringway technology, our sounds and styles that we like in the UK and America, the Italian cabinetry, and they put it all together, and we made our own organ.
It's a happy amalgam, as you might say.
It's funny how we've ended to this point, but certainly the journey is nothing what we expected. I mean, we were joking, so we were setting up the stand here, that if somebody had told us 5 years ago that we'd be wheeling in a Lowry, a Ringway, and a Versi, putting them all side by side, I wouldn't have believed you.
No.
You know, but it's been an amazing journey for us, and I say it's fantastic because it's giving people more choice who want to buy organs.
fascinating to sit down and just chat about the, as you say, the development and the sort of the timescale of these things. I often wonder, Trevor, now, thinking back to those days of Lowry Holiday and Lincoln Wood and so on and so forth, the good old days, as you might say, what people like Harry Stoneman would have made of these modern Lowry organs. It would be fascinating. I've been just trying to imagine him sat there. There would be a draw. Sadly not.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things, actually, when we got the sad news that Kauai was stopping production of Lowry organs, there were so many emotions attached to that. And for me, you know, I've grown up as a young child. I started playing when I was 10 years old. I started working Allens when I was 12. And this kind of realisation that in my lifetime, this is something that has been and gone, as it were. And I desperately didn't want that to be the case, because, you know, it is a fantastic instrument. It's an amazing hobby, and we were going to do everything in our power to keep the hobby and the organ world going. It's like all the work that Michael's doing here, keeping the festivals going and keeping the interest alive, because it is an amazing, amazing hobby, and it's so much fun. And via our connections in America, it's the same in America. There's so much passionate interest, and it's just a shame that circumstances have made it very difficult for manufacturers to produce enough instruments in enough quantity for it to be practical for them.
Thank you ever so much for sparing some time. It's been while the afternoon concerts have been on. It's I'm sure you've got other things to do than chat about those halcyon days. But it's a popular, as you say, it's a popular pastime, and still continues to be.
What's wonderful about these festivals, though, is coming to meet people who we talk to on the phone.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like work when we're sitting around chatting, drinking coffee and so forth, but it's lovely just meeting up with people that we know so well, but meeting them face to face. And it's why it's important to come out and do these things. As much as the world has changed and everything's online, and for us especially as a company, I mean, YouTube is incredibly important to us, and the videos and the channel we have on there, and we do live shows on there twice a week. I mean, that's been a revelation for us.
Well, I think everybody's had to learn to do things like that with the pandemic.
The fact that we can sit in our little room in Great Yarmouth and broadcast to the world, for me, that just blows my mind. I remember the days of satellite link-ups, if you wanted to watch TV or have a reporter from the States. And now we can just log on and bang, we've got people in America watching what we do. But what we still love is actually meeting people. That's why when we sound organs over the phone, myself and Tom love going on the van, so that we get to meet the person and actually sit down and play the organ to them live, because that's still what I grew up doing. Is that, you know, when I started working in the shop, every organ you sold face to face with the customer, and you played it to them, and you knew them. Now the world has changed, and not most of our customers are on the phone, but actually meeting them face to face and getting that reaction when people open the door and they go, "Oh, you're the man off the telly."
Yes, well, there you go, you see. I have yet to aspire to that, I'm afraid. Who are you with the radio? Never mind.
Well, we've never had that before. You know, because
there was a certain degree of anonymity, wasn't there? But no longer the case.
They see us on YouTube, they know exactly what we look like. But it's wonderful, you know. And again, it's fascinating how technology has changed, because we were kind of pioneers for doing videos on YouTube for the organ industry. We started making demonstration DVDs sort of 20 years ago to promote the Lowry organs.
I remember them well.
And we got them on YouTube as soon as we could. We put our first videos on YouTube about 15 years ago. We established our channel. But the way that people watch YouTube now is totally different. You know, back then it was something that people would do in their study, where their big computer was, and they'd sit there in their office chair and maybe watch, you know, a couple of minutes of a video and so forth. Well, now people settle themselves down in their lounge, they put their smart TV on, and they sit and watch hours of YouTube videos in the comfort of their own home, in their surround sound, in high definition. And it's amazing because people now watch our videos for so much longer, because when you put stuff on YouTube, you get the stats of how long people watch for, and if they watch one of your videos, what they then watch next and so forth. And it's fascinating watching how that's changed, that people watch for a lot longer, they stay and watch another video and then another video. And it's really fascinating, for us it's just amazing as a tool to reach out to people and let people know that we still do organs.
It's an emerging canvas, as you say, Trevor. I mean, one dreads to think what the future will be like, but I suspect that Alan's will still be there, bricks and mortar, that level of service, as you say, that you grew up with, man and boy, and long may you continue to be a great ambassador for the trade. It's superb to sit down. Thanks very much indeed, Trevor, for me.
Well, I mentioned Harry Stornham during my conversation there with Trevor Flunder, and you heard Harry on an unspecified Lowry organ there with Once I Loved. And before that, in the middle, you heard Trevor Flunder playing the new Ringway Maestro organ with John Miles's music. And finishing off there with Jim Vogelman on Lowry Majesty from around about 21 years ago with Rule Britannia.
Featuring all that's best from the King of Instruments on Community Keyboards.
Well, next, an opportunity to hear my conversation in full with Richard Bauer and Paul Thurkettle from Yamaha Backstage.
This is very surreal. I don't think the tables have ever been turned before, but we're surrounded by video cameras as well as people from Yamaha. And just to prove it, it's there on the big banner. Lovely to be joined by Richard Bauer and Paul Thurkettle from Yamaha.
Hello.
Good to see you. Now, chappies, Richard, tell me, just for the benefit of our listeners, your role in Yamaha is?
My official role is brand ambassador, which means that I only have about 8 hats to wear. with lots of different... I mean, but my main work now is Yamaha Japan. Yeah. So essentially, I'm part of the team that does the research and development for new products. And that's kind of been me for the last 10 years or so, actually been involved with the R&D team since 1998. So it's getting on 25 years now, 24, 25 years.
I remember you when you were a slip of a lad in short trousers, Mr. Bauer.
I know, yeah. It's,
I mean, was that 3 weeks ago?
Well, do you know what? We were only talking with Byron Jones last night, because Byron was on before me last night and playing his wonderful Verzi instruments, and it's just great to hear that big organ sound. But I was actually just reminiscing that it was me that actually introduced Byron to the Verzi organ.
Was it?
In a chalet in Barton Hall. Out late at night, and we decided to go and get a Chinese carry out and then come back to the hut.
When I got coming out now, isn't it?
Yeah,
we haven't even got to you yet, Paul.
I got my little Verzi portable organ there, and Byron was still playing Hammond at the time, so we started about, I guess we went out for the carry out about 9:30. We started back in the hut about 10:30. And at 1:30, there was a knock on the door, quite irate. Shut up.
Who's making all
trying
that
to go to sleep. Yes. And of course that was basically the rest is history as far as that goes for Byron. I mean, that also in a weird way got me involved with Yamaha, because I changed concert instruments at that time. But I remember we talking, oh, I guess that's got to be 85, 86. Yeah. I mean, you're scarily, it's almost 40 years ago.
I fully understand. We talk in decades now rather than weeks, don't
we? That's the problem. Yeah. And you do completely lose track of time. You know, we think, oh, it's 15 years ago. Well, it isn't, it's 25. Mm.
Scary stuff. Yeah. Much to my chagrin... Ooh, which is a French word, I understand, which means whatever it means. another star of the keyboard circuit who has never crossed our paths is Paul Thurkettle.
Hello.
Now, I'm quite used to this sort of northeast accent because my youngest lad's up at Newcastle University in his final year. So, and anything that you say, I could understand. So that's a start, isn't it? How did you become involved with Yamaha, Paul?
Oh, well, this goes back many moons.
There's always one heckler, isn't there?
Yeah. Just for the record, that was the wonderful Mr. Andy Carville.
Oh, well, he's no friend of this programme, I'll tell you now.
But no, of course, we're back in the early days. I was with Technics Musical Instruments. We had a great time way back then. But of course, things change. And after that, I joined Korg. And I was business development manager at Korg for some 7-8 years. Time flies, wow. Really. And I got a call. Of course, this young chap here constantly kept niggling in the ear over the years.
Come to the dark side, Paul.
Come to the dark side.
Come over to the dark side.
So in 2014, I got a phone call to say, look, would you like to come and do this, that, and the other? And of course, how could I not join such a wonderful company? And I have to say, I ain't saying that just for the benefit of you and your wonderful listeners, or indeed Yamaha Backstage, as we're filming for. Welcome to Backstage, by the way.
This is really weird. Your viewers are possibly saying, what on earth is this strange chap waving this lollipop from backwards and forwards? Yeah, left, right? That's confused people.
So, yeah, it was great to get involved with Yamaha. So my job basically is, as Richard said, brand ambassador and business development specialist. So I do a lot of, as your listeners hopefully might know, our listeners certainly know because we've told them before, I would do a lot of stuff behind the scenes, certainly in my previous jobs, and I would kind of make these things happen, but be sat behind the stage, behind the scenes, making these kind of decisions and let's do this and let's do that. But I've been kind of wheeled out in my my former glory because there's a lot more of me than there used to be. Lockdown wasn't kind, and now actually, you know what? It's really nice to be on this side of the fence because I get to meet wonderful people like yourself, of course, and our wonderful customers, and of course, hosting Backstage with Richard is great. Because we get to be the face of Yamaha. Because we get to meet people and talk to people about our wonderful instruments.
I mean, obviously, this is the burning question. Because, look, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure
you're
will.
Wrong.
I'm sure you will. Yeah. Sure. But
welcome to Backstage.
Leave that in.
We always
no,
do.
I mean, I'm of that kind of age where trying to, even for somebody with inverted commas, inside knowledge, it was always very much the case that these big companies, and I include Yamaha in that, would jealously guard their business secrets. You know, if there was rumours of a new product coming along, it was just that, you know, nobody could actually get any information. And I could understand that from a commercial, you know, business point of view. But why is it that all at once you two guys have come along and you sat on, I was going to say very nice settees, but this is as best Yamaha can do, that's fine. No, this is the Village Hotels, nothing to do with Yamaha. But, you know, you come along and you're kind of saying already that you're going to open the floodgates. There's going to be an access all area type of mentality. Are they not trembling in their shoes at Yamaha HQ?
Well, one of the things that we've missed during COVID, as everyone has, I mean, nobody's been able to get out. Nobody's been going out doing gigs or doing anything. One of the things that we've all missed is this interaction just with our customers. But even before that, and I know Paul's a very, very strong believer in this, whenever I've done demonstrations way back, Tyros 1, PSR 8000, 9000, something, you know, we're talking, again, well over 20 years here. It's not just a point, you know, this is a piano, this is a clarinet, this is a whatever. Because it's all been done. Let's involve everyone in the story of where that sound's come from, why that sound has come from there, what it's doing in the product, and just making a story and bringing people into more of a social thing of actually feeling that they've been, you know, there's a feeling that they're part of something. Yeah. Because for lots of, you know, let's be honest, for most of our customers, they play at home. It can be quite a solitary thing. We know that, you know, for some people, bless them, they may be very busy being carers for partners or all of that, and that there's lots of family issues and all of this and the strains and stresses of life. And these instruments become an escape for so many people, and that can be an escape from lots of different things. So already these things are so much more than just being an instrument. It can be, for some people, it's literally just the cavalry coming over the hill to have 2 hours sitting doing something that's for them.
That's very true.
And so one of the things that I'm very, very, very conscious of is that these instruments also, you know, for lots of people, you know, the last 2 years have been really tough for everybody. And as all of us get a little bit older, I think we get a little bit more nostalgic about the things that we enjoyed when we were much younger. For my generation, the thing that makes me nostalgic is the 80s music. So I actually like to sit down and just recreate some of that. Okay. It's nice to listen to it on the MP3 in the car and all of that, but it's actually much more fun to recreate it yourself. Yeah. You know, for an older generation, that's going to be the 60s stuff. You know, sort of memories of meeting your partner and going out to the dance at the Lortel Pally and all of that. And, you know, the Beatles turning up at, you know, Scarborough Scout Hut or wherever it was when, you know, in 1961 where nobody had ever heard of them. And all of these things, which were just brilliant memories. Yeah. And these things become memory factories. You know, it's a way of recreating some just happier times. So if we can get people involved, more involved in, you know, how we make the sounds, how we put the sounds together, all of this, just bring them into, or kind of bring them into the fold and make it more than an instrument, that's got to be good for everybody.
And I kind of guess that this is also the reason why you've paired up with the Yamaha Club. And one person who's not here, obviously, looking at the empty chairs, is Grandad Lynn.
He's
you know, my granddad, bless him. I mean, I remember.
I'm so pleased you said that.
Oh, yes. I could get away with it just. But I remember in 1980, Link, or was it 1880 something or other, there was an opportunity to go and hear this player who I'd never heard of. Mm. In fairness, I was very, very green at the time, like the Incredible Hulk almost. And it was just Glyn Madden, who was appearing at like a little tiny village hall. Yeah. I don't think that would happen now because the big Yamaha tours sort of tend to frequent the big cities. But this was a tiny little village. And went along, and the place was packed, little civic hall, and it was packed to the gunnels. And there was the Yamaha, I don't know, D85 and D65, yeah, those halcyon days. Yeah. And, you know, people were buying them, but when it almost seemed to be that the professional player, i.e. Glyn, doing the demo on stage, and when he'd done his bit, everybody went home and go, oh, I wish I got one of those, you know. And then the next time they would see something like that would be down at the local organ society and things like that. In other words, what I suppose I'm trying to say in a convoluted way is that today's instruments are being played by those ordinary man and woman in the street, if I can put it so disparagingly, that are the same instruments that are being played, like Paul's showcase this afternoon on stage on Genos. You know, you asked who's got a Genos, and quite a few people put their hands up.
Of course.
So you know, you are playing to people who actually have hands on and time to spend with them. I mean, from your point, and I suppose the same question really to Richard, but I'll ask Paul while I'm here. The point of having to keep one pace ahead of the end user. Mm. How difficult is that now as a professional musician, given these instruments?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And to be fair, it kind of rolls into the question that you asked before. You know, from a commercial point of view, you know, companies like Yamaha and our competitors, and competition is very important. But it's important that from a commercial point of view, we do have closely guarded secrets, of course. And that goes for any kind of manufacturer, you know, whether it be car or whatever.
But we're, I think, I suppose the answer to the question of you know, what instrument is coming next, you know, we keep that kind of team. The answer is there's always something next. There's constantly something being reviewed and researched and developed, because we have to keep moving forward. And that's what keeps Yamaha abreast of the game. And to answer that question that you've just asked is, you know what, I think... part of my job is to go out and meet and greet people and show them our beautiful instruments and understand what people want. And one really interesting thing is that, you know, when you go out into the normal walk of life, I'm not talking about, you know, where we are here with, you know, a group of like-minded enthusiasts, but when you go out into the real world, shopping centre, for instance, and you talk to people in shopping centres, half of them will just walk past you. You know, I could be sat there with a piano. Half of them will just walk past you. But there's quite a lot of them will give you that second look, will look and glance and think, oh. And you can just see that little spark of magic there, because they're thinking, oh, I've always wanted to play one of those. And that little bit of magic is the really important ingredient, because let's face it, life doesn't get any easier. It hasn't got any easier. And the ability to play, I mean, if we just took a piano with no bells and whistles, we just took a piano and we stuck it in a room and we stuck Mrs. Smith in there and said, okay, let me see what you can do. It's up to her. It's up to Mrs. Smith. It's up to her ability to play the piano. And if, with respect to Mrs. Smith, if she's not very good, or if she's got limited ability, well, it ain't going to sound very good. Because it's her that's making the instrument sing, if you like. So we realise that and we understand that. And in this area of our business, and of course our business is very multifaceted, we've got lots of areas, you know, we can talk about that in a minute, but we want to deliver instruments to our customers that can actually deliver musicality almost instantly. So that we can put Mrs. Smith in a room with an instrument, and within 10 minutes she's actually playing something. Almost, you know, if you did a survey and said to someone, you know what, have you ever thought about playing a musical instrument? There's a huge percentage of people would say, oh, I'd love to play the piano, or I'd love to play the guitar, or I'd love to play a musical instrument. But the problem is, you sprinkle a little bit of real life on it, certainly in this day and age. Families, children, jobs, you know, all the other things that in life prevents us from doing the things that we really want to do. Because, you know, who wants to get in at 7:30 of an evening after a full day at work, you know, making the kids teas, you know, looking after the husband or the wife, and then thinking, oops, I'm late for my piano lesson. It's 8:30, it's chucking it down with rain, and I've got to drive across town to go to my piano lesson. Unless you're really, really dedicated, there's not a lot of people. And things were different way back, because people did, because life was different. But now we have a different way. So now we have the ability to actually say, okay, learning to play is really important. But the real magic of our instruments, actually, is you can sit down. And if I can give you a little, hypothetically, of course, if I can give you a little tablet that says, I can play, there's a huge proportion of the general public are going to swallow that tablet, because they just want to play. They don't want the academic side. They don't want to have to go to music lessons. They're not bothered about doing the exams. They actually just want to sit down. And as Richard said, play that music from the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, whatever era they're kind of from. They just want to be able to play. And there's a huge fraternity of people that want to do that. Now, of course, there are on the other side of that, there are a huge amount of people that want to take that stage further. And they want to do the academic side. You know, they want to do their grades. And they want to go to the lessons and be able to be taught how to play correctly. And if that's what they want to do, that's absolutely fair, and that's great.
Just on that point, Paul. So given that that the ideal situation is to wave this magic wand or this little tablet to say I can do this,
Does that mean, therefore, that, and as you say, with everybody's demands on time and preoccupations these days, does that mean to say, therefore, that if they take that tablet, to use your analogy, and suddenly think, oh, it's not as easy as I thought, therefore, like many of those Bon Tempi instruments, the Woolworths plastic toy things that ended up under people's beds.
That's right. Yeah.
Do these expensive instruments, are they likely to be condemned to the lack of interest department in a spare bedroom somewhere?
Again, a very good question. But I think that, again, this boils back to a very interesting topic. And that is, let's say you have a spark of interest. There's someone that's thinking, you know, I'd really like to play. Or you maybe have a son or a daughter that you'd like to play, and there is a little spark of interest. So you go out and you buy them, for want of a better term or brand, let's say Bon Tempi. Many other instrument brands are available. And Bon Tempi made some very fine instruments. But let's say you bought them the Bon Tempi that had a few knobs and buttons and switches on it. Is that enough to really spark that interest and really make them get into it and practice? Because let's face it, playing a musical instrument isn't the easiest of things to do, if you're going to do it correctly. And let's be honest, there's no magic wand that's going to say, you know what, you can play really well, really quickly. It takes practice. But we do have technology that enables you to get involved with that much quicker and be able to play much quicker. And that's giving you the opportunity through our technology, because we've got some phenomenal products that will do some incredible things that will spark that interest. For instance, let's take Mrs. Smith and a piano. She's got to really work hard to learn to play the piano. And let's say she wants to play some, I don't know, Elton John music, Billy Joel music. She's a bit of a rock chick and she wants to do a bit of Elton John, let's say.
So she'll need the Yamaha magic pills. You probably need some paracetamol or something.
But if she can't do that, then there's your initial problem.
Yeah.
Let's say she can do that to a point. Whatever degree of ability it is, that she can play some Elton John stuff, really nice. It's still her and the piano. Well, now we have the ability to bring not just her and the piano, but the rest of Elton John's band home with her. Yeah. She, and the way that I like to think, and Richard certainly likes to think of our instruments, is you're the conductor of the band. And whatever band it is, whether it's Elton John or Billy Joel or Andrew Rue or Glenn Miller or Cliff Richard, whoever, whatever artist that you like, because we're all different. The band is in there, it's in the product, it's in the instrument, and you are the conductor. Now, the one thing the instrument isn't is telepathic, and we've said this on a few occasions, but we're working on that.
Don't tell them that!
No, sorry, backstage.
there's a button on the new Genos version 5 that says Mystic Meg.
That's right. Yeah. But instruments, they're not telepathic, so we've got to tell them what we want them to do, because we're the conductor of the band. And that's where we get our operating surface from, our buttons and our screens, and very, very easy to use, very tactile instruments. So I'm the conductor of the band, but I'm also the instrumentalist. So I'm the piano player or the sax player or the clarinet player or whatever. And all of a sudden, I've gone from, with respect to Mrs. Smith, I've gone from Mrs. Smith and a piano to a full band in my front room. I've only got limited playing ability. Let's say I can only play with two fingers, which, with respect to a lot of our friends here, they all have limited playing ability. In fairness, there's some very, very good players as well. Yeah. But in the majority, a lot of them are hobbyists. They've got limited playing ability. And in fact, we do a demo where there's a lot of customers say, we're playing the demo, and they say, oh, it's all right if I could have your fingers. But it doesn't sound like that when I get it home. So what we do, just to show people, because we're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes, we want to show you exactly what this instrument can do. When you get it home, get it out of the box, you switch it on, I won't go through the procedure of what to do, but it's a very simple procedure. And actually, when we're demonstrating to people, we'll show them this. So we'll play the piece of music, and it'll sound amazing. You've got, you know, the screaming trumpets and the trombones or whatever type of music that you're going to play, and the drummer's giving it six, and it just sounds great. We just press stop. Stop. Say, okay, let's get rid of the band. So we press the accompaniment button off, mm-hmm. or the send the band to the bar, because when the band's not on stage, they're in the bar.
Quite happy.
Get rid of the band, they've gone to the bar, so they're not on stage. And I'm just going to put a piano sound on the instrument. I'm just going to play the piano. Mrs. Smith back in the room. So there's the piano. Now let's have a listen to what I'm doing. So just using two fingers, I do exactly the same as I did before. And I play a very basic song using two fingers. So actually the knowledge bit, the ability bit, is this big. It's only very small. But then you sprinkle the magic back on, you bring the band back, press the accompaniment button, press the introduction button. Same thing, same two fingers, bang, off you go and the thing comes to life. Then the interest's there. And you can literally see in customers' faces, that's incredible. And that's what they want to take home. They want to take home that magic.
The experience.
The experience, the ability. Yeah. And that's what Yamaha are so good at. It's that dream. It's that ability of being able to play a musical instrument. And just getting back to the backstage thing, because I want to just say this, because backstage is everything that Richard talked about. Of course, getting our customers involved, and that's a two-way thing. But also, it's educating our customers to actually a company such as Yamaha, because most people will never have any imagination about what Yamaha is, the company itself, where it come from, its beginnings, you know, what that logo stands for. And just for the benefit of your customers that are not seeing us on video, we Yamaha have a logo which is a circle and three tuning forks. And those three tuning forks mean something. They mean melody, harmony, and rhythm. So the three musical elements. Now, when you go backstage with us and we start to look at motorbikes, we make incredible motorbikes. But there's reasons we make incredible motorbikes. We make golf clubs. We make kitchens. We make golf carts. We make... and the list goes on and on and on and on. And on every product that Yamaha manufacture, that logo is on. And the reason that logo is on is to say that at its very heart, it's a musical instrument company. Because we're back in 1887, when Glyn was a boy. In your words, I'm firmly blame you.
Yes, thank you, Paul.
In 1887, when this company was brought about by a gentleman called Torikusu Yamaha, the first thing that he brought to life was a reed organ. And does it not a lot of people know that? So to learn more, you're going to have to come backstage. And we'll tell you an awful lot more about the company. We're going to look at motorbikes. We're going to look at jet skis. We're going to look at, well, Richard might be looking at kitchens.
I'll certainly be looking at motorbikes very soon.
I can't wait for the episode where Richard is riding a jet ski playing the 140,000-pound Yamaha concert. Grand, and testing if it's waterproof.
But it's an interesting thing that you look at the musical instrument side and then you look at the engineering side and think, well, how? Where is the correlation there? It's two completely divergent things, and it's not. It's absolutely not, because if you think about building a grand piano, and Yamaha have been doing that since 1900. What's in a grand piano? Well, you've got the keys to play, but what's in the back of the piano? In the back of the piano is a humongous metal frame where all the strings go on. The tension on that frame is something like 17 tons. You know, it's enormous. Two double-decker buses. Yeah. So if the engineering on that is wrong, The first chord is very loud and very final.
Yeah.
You know, boom, that's the end of that. So there is absolutely a correlation between something that's very, very musical, but also very delicate, and then this huge metal thing that makes it work that is made in our foundry, because it's made in a Yamaha foundry.
And interestingly, motorbikes didn't come till 1955.
So he's very knowledgeable, isn't he?
He's got, you know, such a long time.
Afterwards.
Because, again, back in the real world, when, you know, if you said to someone, Yamaha, I work for Yamaha, you'd find that, I think it's kind of 50-50, really.
It is. They lie this. More and more, actually, you know, sort of 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was, oh, motorbikes.
Yes.
Yeah. But now, it tends to be.
Oh, pianos. Yeah.
It's funny how things kind of change, isn't it, over the time?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's no holds barred then, really, with what your viewers are going to find over the coming months.
I think it's going to be really excited. It really is. We've got loads of things that we are going to look at, and we've all looked at already. There's loads of people that we actually still going to meet. I mean, as an example. Very soon, actually very close to home, there's a local legend in the motorbike scene, a chap that's well into his 70s now, was Scottish motorbike champion way back in the 60s, who actually has a Yamaha motorbike dealership in my hometown. And this chap's name kept cropping up and cropping up and cropping up as literally a local legend of road racing, you know, doing the TTs and the Scottish Championship and all of this. So I'm going to see him, and we're going to again have a chat together. One, about the bikes and about his history, because it's absolutely staggering what he's had about five lifetimes worth. But also actually not to speak about the differences between what happens with the motorbikes and with the musical instruments, but actually to discover really how similar it all is. And it really is.
Watch this space then, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Watch this space.
And you know what? It's a light-hearted look at all of this. It's a bit of fun.
I think they've probably gathered that already.
Exactly. Well, now, you can settle an argument here, chaps, while you sat down. The first episode, the teaser episode, who decided to call it episode zero, by the way?
That was me.
Oh, all right. It was very good title. Very good title, I feel, don't you?
The idea behind that was it was just a kind of teaser and almost like a pilot.
If anybody hasn't seen it, it was based in Glynn's mansion in
Chateau Madden.
Somebody I read rather cuttingly described it as an episode of Last of the Summer Wine, which I thought was rather unfair. was it the boss himself? Oh, well, maybe he thinks, you know what, in for a penny.
A modicum of truth there.
No, we did that because we wanted people to get people to know who I am, let people know who Richard is, just remind people, refresh people. You know, we've all been in the trade a long time. Me, kind of behind closed doors. Richard on the R&D side, so hasn't been really let out for quite a long time. So we just wanted to go and have a chat and say, you know, this is who I am, this is where I come from, this is Richard, this is where he comes from. And it did turn into a little bit of the Last of the Summer Wine, but it was fun. It was a great afternoon. And what our viewers didn't see was we went to a local restaurant and had a few bottles of wine afterwards.
Well, which was, why am I not surprised at that?
And a reminder, you can catch up with all the exploits of Richard, Paul and Glynn and everybody else connected with Yamaha backstage on their YouTube channel. Well, let's have music to end this extra edition of the programme this time. This is a recording I made featuring Pete Shaw on the Korg PA4X keyboard and the Barbra Streisand hit Somewhere from West Side Story. Pete Shaw and Somewhere on Korg PA4X. Well, that's just about it for this extra edition of Community Keyboards. A reminder that if you've missed anything, then you can head over to the communitykeyboards.co.uk website, where there are lots more programmes for you to enjoy. Huge thanks to Michael Wooldridge for very kindly allowing our microphones into the Keyboard Cavalcade Festival 2022. From Ian Wilson-Holm, take care, all the best, and until the next time, bye for now.